This is from the Socialist Standard, number 1457, which is January 2026 edition. If you want to find it, it's volume 122. Over the weekend of the 29th to 30th of November, some 2,000 attendees at a conference in Liverpool founded a new political party, simply called Your Party. After Labour lost the 2019 general election, long-time left-winger Jeremy Corbyn resigned as leader and was succeeded by the man who is now Prime Minister. The 4 years in which he was leader, Corbyn had tried to steer the Labour Party towards the left. Starmer decided not just to reverse this, but to turn the Labour Party into a mainstream capitalist party, even to the extent of describing itself as a better party of business than the Tories. Corbyn himself was suspended as a member of the Parliamentary Labour Party, though not of the Labour Party itself. Starmer could have let him stay a member, as Corbyn would have wanted, but he and those around him were adamant. They wanted to completely change the Labour Party by, in effect, lopping off its left wing. Corbyn's supporters were expelled. Corbyn himself was not allowed to stand as a Labour candidate in the 2024 general election. They put up a candidate against him, which meant that he stood against a Labour candidate and so was automatically expelled from the Labour Party. He won easily as an independent. And from that point on, there were calls for Corbyn to support the formation of a new left of Labour Party, which would in effect be the Labour Party's former left wing, as a separate political party. Whatever the reason, Corbyn dithered and another suspended Labour MP, Zara Sultana, precipitated things by announcing in July that she was resigning from the Labour Party to co-lead a new left-wing party with Corbyn. This was an announcement that a lot of people had been waiting for, and up to 800,000 people were said to have expressed an interest in the new party, though by the time of the conference, some only 53,000 had actually joined. A new party cannot be created just like that. It has to have a statement of what it stands for and a constitution. Corbyn and his advisers drew up a plan in which, in theory, seemed reasonable enough, as long as the Provisional Committee played fair. A Provisional Committee is set up to draft a statement of aims and a constitution, both to be put to a founding conference. These would be subject to amendments suggested by meetings of members. Those attending the conference are to be chosen by lot, now called sortition. Conference will debate and finalise the documents and select amendments. These will be voted for or against online, not just by those chosen to attend the conference, but also by the rest of the membership on the basis of one member, one vote. This, including sortition, seems like a democratic way of going about founding a new party, whatever its aims. Choosing those attending a founding conference by lot should ensure that they will be a representative cross-section of the membership and reflect the views of the average member and not just of an activist minority. More generally, it is an alternative to election, but still a democratic way of choosing people to carry out particular tasks, as it is already today for choosing trial juries, and could have had a wider use in a classless socialist society. This, however, did not go down well amongst the activist minority made up of the various Trotskyite groups that had decided to enter the new party, as in the past they had entered the Labour Party. They argued that this would exclude experienced activists like themselves. In the event, it didn't exclude them. It just ensured that they were represented in accord with their proportion to the new party's members. The Trotskyite groups were pleasantly surprised that quite a few of their militants were chosen to attend, even some from the more obscure grouplets. The Trotskyites also objected to a provision in the proposed constitution barring dual membership with another political party. This was, in fact, already in the application form to become a member and take part in the founding process. This, however, wasn't enforced, and members of the Socialist Workers' Party, the old militant tendency, now calling themselves SPEW, aka Socialist Party England Wales, and the most lesser Trotskyite groups joined and participated freely in the pre-conference Your Party meetings. One objection to Trotskyites being in the new party was set out by the General Secretary of the Communist Party of Britain, Robert Griffiths, in an article in the August issue of their paper Unity, where he criticised the readiness of the ultra-left sects to infiltrate broad-based movements in order to divide them, poses left opposition to the leadership, and to recruit from those they influence and mislead. Which is indeed what Trotskyites plan, though it's a bit of a cheat coming from the CPB, as that's what its followers used to be good at. Incidentally, the CPB position is not to join the new party, but to vote and campaign for its candidates under certain circumstances. The Trotskyites left no time in forming a left opposition and campaigning to make the constitution of the new party as democratic as possible. This was not because they believe in democratic organisation, but because it would give them a wider opportunity to work and recruit within the new party. They joined as the Socialist Unity Group. One of its constituents called itself the Bolshevik Tendency, which would have been a better name for their faction. They are hypocrites because their own organisation is not organised democratically. Take the SWP, for example. It's run by a central committee, which is chosen this way. The outgoing central committee selects and circulates a provisional slate for the new central committee at the beginning of the period for the pre-conference discussion. This is then discussed at the district aggregates, where comrades can propose alternative slates. At the conference, the outgoing central committee proposes a final slate, which may have changed as a result of the pre-conference discussion. This slate, along with any other that is supported by a minimum of 5 delegates, is discussed and voted on by conference. What this means is that the Socialist Workers' Party is run by a self-perpetuating group that in effect renews itself by co-option. The slate selected by the outgoing committee is virtually assured of winning. It was how the Politburo of the CPSU was chosen in the old USSR. The constitution also states that permanent or secret factions are not allowed. When the SWP led a move to seize control of the conference agenda by the means of an emergency resolution, the conference organisers took this literally as a call to storm the platform and invoked the paper ban on dual membership to expel the leaders of the SWP, and they hired a security firm to guard the actual platform. In the end, the conference was voted not to endorse a complete ban on dual membership, but to make acceptance of being in another party more difficult. So the Trotskyites are still there. Before adopting a constitution, the conference also adopted a political statement setting out its general aims. This began, "Your party is a democratic, member-led socialist party that stands for social justice, peace, and international solidarity. Our goal is a transfer of wealth and power, now concentrated in the hands of a few, to the overwhelming majority in a democratic socialist society." This is rather vague and says nothing about how quickly or how slowly this transfer of wealth and power is to take place, nor what is the end results likely to be. It's what the Labour Party promised in its election manifesto for the February 1974 general election. In fact, it's even rather less radical in terms of its rhetoric, as that this manifesto talks about a fundamental and irreversible shift in the balance of wealth and power in favour of the working people and their families. The statement doesn't go into what they envisage this transfer of wealth and power is involving, but it would be much the same as Attlee set out in 1932 in The Will and Way to Socialism, page 42. "A Labour, read your party, government therefore not only by the transference of industry from profit-making to the few to the service of the many, but also by taxation, will work to reduce the purchasing power of the wealthier classes, while by wage increases and by the provision of social services, it'll expand the purchasing power of the masses." So different private profit-making sectors of the economy are to be gradually brought into some form of public ownership, taxes on the rich increased, services provided by central and local government expanded and improved, and money wages increased, all this to take place initially within the framework of the existing mixed private and state capitalist economy. The end result, several decades down the line, would be a society where people's incomes and what they owned would be more equally distributed than now. And what they would be working for is some public they would be working for some public enterprise, paying them a good wage, assuming, and they'd be provided well-funded public services and amenities. This is the old Fabian dream, the gradual transformation of capitalism into a more equal society by means of nationalizations and social reforms. It's not as if it's not been tried and failed. It was always impossible because it involves trying to make capitalism work in a way that it cannot. What drives the economy under capitalism is the pursuit of profits to be accumulated as more capital invested for more profit. If the government interferes with this, the result will be a slowdown in the economy, depriving the government of the tax revenues to proceed further towards a more equal society. Based as it is on profit making, The capitalist economy cannot tolerate a growing increase in purchasing power of the workers and their families at the expense of what is the source of the purchasing power of the rich. Profits. All reformist governments with such a program have failed everywhere, the most recent spectacular one being the Syriza government in Greece in 2015. This failure is of particular significance to your party, as it has a lot in common with Syriza, whose name is an acronym in Greek for Radical Coalition of the Left Progressive Alliance, which included Trotskyite groups as constituent parts. Leftists explain the failure of Syriza either by lack of determination or by sellout, but in fact it failed because the left-wing government came up against how capitalism works, and it realised that if it continued to try and apply its policy, it would make things worse. They reasoned that if things were going to get worse, it would be better that it should be managed by them, who had some sympathy for the workers, rather than by their political opponents, who don't. A Your Party government would face a similar dilemma. It's all very well Zara Sultana saying, as she did in her closing speech at the conference, "We are not here for tweaks of a broken system. We are not here just to lower some bills and a sprinkling of wealth tax. We are here for a fundamental transformation of society." Well, it got her a standing ovation, and it will on May Day, and at the end of the next conference and any similar ceremonial occasions. But in practice, in between, your party will be campaigning for just tweaks and sprinkles and seeking votes and popular support on this basis. It will be yet another reformist party. Support built on that basis would be of no use furthering the cause of socialism.
You have been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. If you would like to find out more, you can visit our website, spgb.net.